it's really, really, I think, important for people to remove their day-to-day emotion from their money, because it can be entirely encompassing and controlling. It's never too late to start it again and to build it back up again. Oh no, when you say budgets to people, they go, gross. Or it's like this thing that's overwhelming and, you know, you have to get 100% right. You have to watch every dollar and all that kind of stuff. And I just think, oh, yuck, yeah, I'd say yuck to that too. Everyone is so willing to hand you lines of credit, and they're so willing to say, here's an overdraft, here's a credit card, here's this, you should do that, you should do this. Take away the fear of facing money and facing the reality and turn it into, I mean, almost a game.
I'm Frances Cook. Welcome to Making Sense, supported by KiwiBank. Budget is often a dirty word, immediately making you think of cutting back and missing out. But what if you used it as a way to create happiness and calm instead? That's what the founder of Big Dollar Energy Budgets is all about, pushing for an approach that reduces stress and stops you from having to think about money all day, every day. And surely that's the dream, to feel like you have control over where your money is going without stressing about every cent. So what's possible, particularly if you're not rolling in it? I'm joined now by Cameron Wisling, founder of Big Dollar Energy Budgets. Now, love that name for it, Big Dollar Energy. What is that?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because I came up with this name a little while ago, and it entirely was meant to encompass the fact that if you have big dollar energy, if you just say that, instantly you think of someone that is walking around that knows their shit and can cope with life, right? And it's walking around like they have the money to deal with anything that comes up. I don't necessarily think it needs to be, oh my God, I'm a millionaire, or I have tens of thousands of dollars at my disposal in my account right now. But it can be that you've got the confidence to go about life knowing that you've got your finances sorted. And that's what it means to me. And it's got a great innuendo that makes people laugh. So, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah, I got to say, you're in my notes under the acronym BDE, and it does make me giggle every time. I have to mentally correct myself every time.
Yeah, good. That was the point. Yeah.
What do you think is helpful about taking that sort of positive approach to your money, to your budget?
Well, because I think, and I, rightfully so, I think so many people get really caught up with how grim money can be, right? You worry about their finances day in, day out. And I completely get it. I've been there. I've done that. It is not fun when you are barely scraping by. Of course, you're thinking about money 24/7. But if you can get to a stage where you've future-proofed yourself and you know your budget inside and out and your expenses are within that, that you know with you don't need to worry about it, I think that's just like the golden aim. No matter what that number is for you, that you've got everything automatically ticking over so that you just don't have to think about it anymore. And that is, I think, my like biggest hope for everyone, is that no matter what your income level is or your expense level is or all that kind of stuff, that you've got your finances to a point that you don't need to actively think about it every day. I'm not saying that like never review it. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But it's really, really, I think, important for people to remove their day-to-day emotion from their money, because it can be entirely encompassing and controlling. You know, that's not really fun for anyone. And, you know, life's about living, and you don't want to be trapped into the worry, I guess.
That's actually such a good point, right? Because there've been all sorts of interesting little money psychology experiments over the years. One that has always stuck with me is for people who are on tight budgets, if they do a test and then they are cued to think about something like an unexpected car repair, technically nothing has actually changed with their money situation. They're just being made to think about the possibility of it happening. And then they do another very similar test. They score worse. Just that stress of thinking about money, that stress triggered from an unexpected expense, they will then have less brain power available for doing other things. They do worse on the test. And I so sympathize for people in that situation because, you know, similarly, you know, I've also been in tight money situations at different times. It's really hard moving from that stressed daily state to feeling more confident and in control, right? If you were talking to someone who was currently in that stressed state, where do you start?
Yeah, I think I'm not surprised that, you know, when people, you know, let's say things like, oh, my car, this, that instantly, I think everyone across the board, mate, everyone go, that sounds expensive. You know, it's like when you go over a pothole and you're like, yeah, that felt expensive. It's totally understandable. But I think the best place to start is thinking about, okay, there are always going to be unexpected expenses, right? Like your car needing new tires, that's a vomity inducing one. There's always going to be the things that come up like, oh, we forgot this person's birthday, or oh, I've been invited out to a dinner or something, and you're like, okay, well, this is something I haven't budgeted for. The way I deal with it personally is having your emergency fund or your sinking funds. Not so much as an emergency fund in terms of the small things like going out to dinner, but, you know, having a really good buffer that you've built up over time that you know is there to use. So I think some people, you know, they might say, okay, you know what, I'm going to have an emergency fund or a buffer or whatever you call it of, let's say, $2,000. I'm going to aim to have that in my account so that if anything happens, I've got that backup. What I see a lot of people doing is then they stress out because they still have the stress because, say, their car breaks down and then they have to use some of that money. And then they go, oh no, I've had to use that money and I need to build that back up again. But the point is, it's there for that purpose and it should alleviate the stress because you've had that money sitting there, right? But I think so many people still don't, you know, and it still kind of goes, oh man, I didn't want to use that money and now I have. So my piece of advice there is always just to tell people to be realistic with yourself. Expect that money to go. Expect yourself to have to spend that money one day and know that you'll build that buffer back up and you'll do what you did again. But it's within your control. You know, you've done as much as you can to control the uncontrollables, right? There's, you know, the stuff that comes up, the scares in life or any of those kind of things, all we can do is plan our best approach forward, hope that it works in time, and then reassess once it's been and done and start again. You know, the unfortunate thing is sometimes, yeah, you might have, when it rains, it pours, right? So sometimes you get those expenses and you might use up the entire buffer or you might need more than that. And yeah, that sucks. But you've got to remember that it was there for a purpose, you've used it for the purpose, and it's never too late to start it again and to build it back up again. And I mean, I've been there multiple times. In fact, I've recently had to use my buffer to sort out my car. And so right now I have not much buffer in my account right now, which makes me so incredibly nervous. But I have to remind myself, no, I know that I've used it for its purpose and I'm going to build that back up again.
This is the thing, right, is these emergency savings are here for emergencies and they're there to save your bum. And yeah, nobody likes necessarily to dip into them. But when they're doing their intended purpose and saving you from problems, that's exactly what they're there for. So, you know, give yourself some grace. I mean, let's go back a bit in your story. What got you interested in the budgeting space and talking about it? Because I love your approach. You're super positive to it. A lot of people don't feel that way about budgets.
Yeah. Oh no, when you say budgets to people, they go, oh, yeah. or it's like this thing that's overwhelming and, you know, you have to get 100% right. You have to watch every dollar and all that kind of stuff. And I just think, oh, yuck, yeah, I'd say yuck to that too. So, I mean, if I go back, like I have always been someone that's been money-minded and money-focused. Growing up, it was always something that it wasn't even drummed into me. It was just something that I was really interested in. I was always saving up things and kind of planning out what I was going to spend money on and all that kind of stuff. Then I was launched into the real world as an adult. And of course, everyone is so willing to hand you lines of credit. And they're so willing to say, here's an overdraft, here's a credit card, here's this, you should do that, you should do this. And I did, like everyone does. And I think it was a couple of months of being at uni, living away from home, I racked up thousands and thousands of debt and overdrafts and credit cards and anything that I got handed. Then, you know, you you're living in that overdraft, you're living in that debt because you can't then pay it all back because you've spent way beyond your means. Then I met my now wife and we were like, what is going on? Like, we shouldn't be living like this, and kind of really focused on getting rid of the debt and staying out of debt. And since then, we've never, ever gone back into consumer debt, which I think is both intentional and there is a bit of luck to that too, because I get that sometimes there is no other option. You know, sometimes it's like, you know what, this sucks, but we're going to have to do this to survive the next 3 months or whatever it is. So coming into my more career-focused aspect to my life, I started working in a mental health centre and looking after people with really severe mental health issues. One of the things I found was really weighing on them was money. It weighs on everyone, but it was very, very hard for them to cope with. My job was to get them into work. And once they were getting into work, they were starting to get these new paychecks and things were quite overwhelming. And what I had them do was just focus on the positives, because there's so many negatives we could focus on in lives. And especially if you've got some really serious mental health issues going on, that is naturally what your mind's going to do, right? It's going to focus and obsess on the negatives. That doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help you. It's not a successful response for your brain to do, but it happens anyway, right? So I know it's easier said than done, but we've just got to, and what I'd always get them to do is focus on the positives. You've got money coming in now. Great. You can pay those bills. Awesome. Okay, yeah, there might not be much left over afterwards, or there might, you know, there's other things you want to achieve, but focus on what you are doing, and then you can get to the point of planning what you want to do in the future. A little bit later, I had these interns that I set up a program in government where people that had been through the care experience system with Wauranga Tamariki, I pulled them into internships and gave them an opportunity to start a career that way. Again, number one thing it came back to was money, resources, and being able to plan for the future. I would just sit them down and we would laugh about it, just have conversations and be like, wow, this is pretty crazy. Like, what is going on here? You know, they'd have debts, they'd have this, they'd have that, you know, and because no one had taught them about money. And so you've got to be able to laugh yourself, right? You've got to be able to look in the mirror and go, wow, that was really shit. Why did I do that? You know, and just kind of go, I've not been good with money, and be honest with yourself, because like there's no shame in that. And the thing I think so many people get like worried, like, oh, I'm going to be judged and people are going to think I'm terrible with this and that. And, you know, everyone's got to be good with money. I mean, I'd say 80% of the people I've ever met in my entire life have not been good with money. Like, it's just not a thing. You know, it's not taught in schools properly. It's not something that's drummed into most people. So you've got to be able to step back and just laugh and just go, okay, yeah, that was dumb. You know, like me thinking about the, you know, 3,000 watt stereo I bought on high purchase when I was 18. Of course, it was dumb. I mean, it made me happy at the time, but it was dumb financially. And so I laugh about that and I go, okay, well, that taught me that I ended up paying that for the next couple of years. And that meant that I wasn't able to access these other opportunities that if I had that money would have afforded me. So then, you know, you look in the mirror, you learn from your mistakes, have a laugh about it and kind of go, okay, what's the plan moving forward? Focus on those positives and figure out where you want to go from there.
I love that. And it's funny because It's really easy to dismiss mindset as wishy-washy, right? And it's a balance, because I think it's really important to acknowledge that people do come from different backgrounds. People do have different challenges, and those challenges are very real. Nobody is disputing that some people have it harder to get to a good place with their money. But at the same time, it is also very real that trying to reduce the stress and panic response will mean you can think more clearly. Trying to feel more positively about your money will mean you're less avoidant with it. You're more willing to engage with it. You're more able to try and spend time looking for opportunities that otherwise you'll miss. I mean, when people are taking the big dollar energy approach, What do you think that changes? Even if nothing else changes, what do you think it changes to change your energy like that?
It changes your relationship with money. It becomes something that's scary. I think that's the biggest thing. I think take away the fear of facing money and facing the reality and turn it into, I mean, almost a game, right? Because numbers are numbers. You know, they don't lie. They're straight up. They are what they are. You know, play with it. You know, try and figure out what you can do. You can manipulate many situations to look very differently, right? It's something that I think people forget in terms of realizing that, I mean, money is there, and then it goes, and it comes, and it goes. And there's definitely situations where, and really hard situations that people are in where they are struggling and have no money coming in or cannot afford their bills. I've lived that. I've been there. I get it. But once you get to a stage, because you will, if you put the work in, you can. And there's definitely people out there that can help to get to a stage where you can kind of go, okay, this is what I want to do now. This is how I'm going to get there. And I'm going to play this game and see it as a game, you know, see it as something that you are trying to win at, you know, and not like the overall, like, oh my God, I'm going to be a millionaire and I'm not going to win until I've become a millionaire. You know, it's little things like, bloody awesome. I paid all my bills this week and I have money left over. I mean, that's a win in my books. That's huge. So I think if anything, if people are following that kind of big dollar energy vibe, building the confidence and having the relationship with money that's not fearful, it's realistic and it's lighthearted.
I love that so much. This might end up touching on something we've already talked about in our conversation, but I still want to explicitly ask you this. What do you think most people get wrong about budgeting?
Two things. I think the first thing that most people get wrong about budgeting is stressing over every dollar and every cent. I have never seen anyone, I mean, it's not to say they're not out there, they might be the superhuman that's listening to this, but I've not seen people successfully track every single dollar and every single cent for every day of their lives and be better off because of it. I think that takes away from trying to have that positive, healthy, light-hearted approach and relationship to money, because it becomes something obsessive and it becomes something that is all-encompassing, which is what we're trying to work away from, right? So we don't want to replace one obsessive fear of money into one obsessive control of money. We want to go from something that's all-encompassing to something that's a part of your life but not the controller of it. The other thing I think people get wrong is they forget to review it. You know, like budgets, lifestyles, your day-to-day changes all the time. And your budget needs to reflect that. Like my daughter just turned 5 and she just started her school, I think, this week. Yeah, it was this week. So because of
That's
that,
so
I
exciting.
know, I cried. Because of that, we have our childcare costs have halved because both my daughters are now not both at kindy. One of them's now at school. So instantly I go on to, I've got a real nerdy big spreadsheet and I change those figures and update the amount that I need to be putting in my bills account because that amount now has lessened. So I can chuck that amount in that, you know, has all my bills paid when I get paid. Those things change all the time. But, you know, bills don't normally go down, they normally go up. So you might realize, oh, like, you know, I've been putting this money aside for my bills, but like suddenly it's not keeping up, it's not covering them all. I have to keep topping this up. Do a review, figure out where where the additional expenses are coming from. Sometimes it's like you've been a bit silly and you've signed up to a couple more subscriptions, like we all do. Even if you're not using them, you forget to cancel them or whatever. And that money, just that small amounts, they chip away and they're pulling away. So I keep a track of, you know, all my subscriptions, all my insurances, all my different things, and make sure that I'm reviewing them. And that comes down to like even like trying to get better quotes every couple of months or every year or so. You know, you review the amounts you're paying for different policies. Do you need as high insurance amount right now, or can you get a better deal on that and all that kind of stuff? Don't set and forget, because if you set and forget, it will just continue to go backwards. Companies, you know, they're not going to call you up one day and be like, hey, guess what? If we're going to charge you less just because we've been away, you know? So always be out there hunting for a better deal. And yes, like, you know, Caitlin and I, my wife, we set up regular monthly check-ins on our budget just to go over it. And half the time it's a 5 minute conversation. Yep, nothing's changed. And we've already reviewed this a couple of months ago. So we'll leave it for a little bit longer. But it's so that we're aware that if we can do anything, we will do it. It helps us keep that relationship with our money that is not obsessive, but still in touch.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. I think checking in on it at regular intervals that aren't daily, right?
Oh,
It's,
yeah.
it's keeping an eye on it without stressing yourself out about it. It's a balance. I love that. I mean, speaking of balance, I mean, you mentioned before about, you know, you got that very expensive stereo and then learned how that would keep on hitting you over the head over the next couple of years. How do you balance, you know, living life now and having some enjoyment and some fun in life versus getting ahead for the future?
Yeah. Oh, hands down. It's not an easy balance. And especially if you're at the start of your budgeting journey, and what I always tend to find is most people at the start of their budgeting journey have very little left over after each pay, and you know, you've paid your bills and all that kind of stuff. So it's hard to be like, okay, so what, I have $50 left over now. How do I both enjoy myself and save for the future? I think you posted something the other day, which I really, really agreed with. It's not the quick wins that are going to get you there, right? It's the stuff over the long-term goals that's going to get you there, you know. I think your analogy was something along the lines of, if you brush your teeth every day, you're going to end up with whiter teeth, right? But everyone wants the quick win of, you know, the quick whitening treatment or whatever. But with budgeting, you really got to go, okay, you know what? I'm going to split that in half, and half of it I'm going to put away. And that, yes, it's a small amount right now, but that will build over time. And I'm not going to touch it until I've reached this particular goal. And then the other half, you need to enjoy yourself. So you do need to put aside money where you go, this is, I'm going to spend this on whatever I want, whatever I feel like in the moment, and I'm going to have fun with it. I think there'll always be room to have fun with your money, because otherwise, what's the point, right? You shouldn't be aiming to save everything you've got or pay all your bills and do all that kind of stuff, because it's not sustainable. I don't believe that someone can operate on entire hardball budget the entire time. It might be something you need to do for a short period of time to sort out a few things. I've done that before. You've got to do it sometimes. Fine. I think over the long term, you've got to allow yourself to be human and have fun. And I certainly do that. So, you know, Caitlin and I have different funds that we put into each payday that give us both our individual spending money, and we can do whatever we like with it and laugh at the other person when they've gone on a really big splurge and bought something ridiculous, because it's fun and it's silly. It helps you, and it gives you that, you know, that dopamine hit. And then, I mean, there's other things you can do around that as well, and like setting up challenges for yourself to delay the spending and all that kind of stuff. But I think overall, if you've got the mechanics of putting certain amounts aside for certain different activities, however you end up using that, it's still a positive.
I talk to people about this a lot, that, you know, we're all on different budgets. We've got different amounts. That is just life. And we might have different budgets at different times of our life too, you know. And so it's one of those things, but at whatever sort of budget level you're at, it's so important to include some level of fun money, whether it's $5 a week or $100 or whatever your amount is, something in there that is guilt-free, spend this on whatever you like, get yourself a little treat. Because otherwise, it's a bit like the crash diet, right, of money. You're not going to keep going. It might technically work on paper, but you are not going to be able to stick with it. We're just not built that way, are we?
Humans, we need the splurges. We need to live our lives and feel like we're doing what we want to do, you know? Because, I mean, who's motivated by constant, like, hard work that has no rewards? No one. You know, that's just silly. I mean, there might be someone out there, but it's not me. I need a lot of
not
rewards.
Me either.
Yeah. And you know, it's again coming back to being realistic with yourself. You know, having the honest relationship with money, going, you know what, I need to have a splurge this week, and that's okay because I'm human. Overall, I'm doing the right thing. And again, you're right. It comes back to the diets. Like, if you're on a diet or you're going to the gym, it's not about, oh, I need to make sure I hit 100% of this all the time. Your overall goal and your overall activity is moving you to a better spot. And if you have a cheat day, whatever it is, fine. If that helps you continue this progress for longer, it's worth it.
100%. Okay, on that note, if someone just they hear the word budget and they shudder, they hate it, they hate the whole idea of it, and they particularly are not an Excel spreadsheet person, in which case you are my people. I am not an Excel spreadsheet person either. And yet I do have a budget of sorts. So from your point of view, Cameron, what's the simpler, pain-free way to set up a budget and take a bit more control of your money?
I think the simplest, most pain-free way is by just figuring out how much are my bills, food, power, rent, anything. All of your bills that are your essentials, right? Not the like, oh, by the way, I need to like go out to the club this weekend and spend $100 on alcohol. No, that's not essential. But like all your essentials and all your bills that you know are going to come every week, figure that amount out. Add on a bit on top of that so you've got a buffer in there as well, because we always all spend more than we need to, let's be honest, and groceries just continue to go up. So it's
Hideous.
crazy. It's really crazy. It makes me want to vomit. So we push all that figure together, and have a separate account, have an automatic payment as soon as you're paid, it goes in there, right? That is the money you don't touch. You just leave it, it's your bills money. The rest of the money, you can decide, okay, I'm going to save $100 this week, or I'm going to set up a regular amount that's going to go into another account in savings that you don't touch. Because if you have those that mechanism set up, you know that when you look at your account, you can spend that money, right? It's not like, oh, and I think I've got this bill and I think I've got that bill. You don't need to have everything worked out on a spreadsheet to do this. You know, you just need to understand how much your bills are and come back and review it. And what I do is I kind of look at my bank statements and total up the amounts I've spent on each different area and over 3 months, and then divide that by the fortnights in those months and work out the average. And then, yeah, that gives you the number you want to put aside into your bills account, and you can go from there. I think it's a really good first step to make sure that all your bills are being paid and you know what money you can and can't spend. You definitely don't need to have a 3-page color-coded spreadsheet, but I maybe might. It's not necessary. Just because I'm a super nerd doesn't mean you have to be too.
And this is the thing as well, is whenever I talk to people about money stuff, I think people often want just like one solution that you say, here you go, that's how you do it. And it's so important to take into account your personality and how you like doing things, because of course we're all different. And I think there's for every sort of money goal, there might be three very good, perfectly legitimate ways of getting there. I don't care which one you pick. What matters is picking one and sticking with it. And it's the one that works for you and your personality. That's all fine. So if someone is a massive nerd like yourself and they do actually want to get into the weeds, what are the tactics to go really deep on your budget?
I'll kind of talk a little more about what's in there. So I have a spreadsheet that has all of my income coming into it, then breaks down all my expenses and groups them by category. I have also then a section of the spreadsheet that calculates how much of my income is spent in each category. So I sum the 60% of my income on all my bills. That comes from Barefoot Investor, one of my favorite. He has suggested percentages, and they've worked for me, so I've taken those. And then it's broken down further into like, you know, my utilities, my transport, my food. I've also added another category of miscellaneous, you know, that comes into like doctor visits, haircuts, subscriptions, that kind of stuff you always forget about and go, oh yeah, oops. Breaks all that down. It also has it tracks all my shares, so I invest regularly in my Sharesies account. I've got two Sharesies accounts for my daughters. Those numbers are continually updated. That stays in there as well. I have a mortgage breakdown. So I have, like, I think, four or five different mortgage accounts split over different periods and different things for different reasons. I track all of those. I figure out when they're coming, some bills, what I'm going to do about those. I've got work plans sorted out.
And then that all trickles down to, you know, my overall financial position or net worth or whatever you want to call it. It's just definitely not something that you need. It's something that I like to see growing because, again, but it's my overall goal right now is to get rid of my mortgage, which is heinously big. Doing all this makes me feel like I have more visibility to get to that point. So I think if you really wanted to get down into the weeds, then put into a spreadsheet, however it works for you, every bit of your financial position that affects you going forward. So like, you know, I've got all that stuff in there. I've got insurance stuff in there. I've got future plans. I've got all that kind of stuff. And it links together so that I can kind of foresee the next 12 months or however long I want to project. Because, you know, life happens and those numbers change, you know, where, you know, someone gets married and you give them a, speaking of experience, my mum just got married and they gave her a ridiculously big wedding gift. But, you know, there's definitely things you want to do, but then that does alter what you've had on your spreadsheet. So, again, you need to go back and review it. But, I mean, it's something I think if you've got all the different aspects to your life, because our financial position is definitely not just made up of, okay, cool, I've got this much money and I've got these many bills, you know. Our financial position is made up of so many different aspects and factors, you know. Most of us as well, we've got our KiwiSavers, that's going to come into the equation. Yeah, for me, I track as much things as possible and I review it all the time to make sure I'm getting the best out of my investments, to get the best out of my goals and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I do admit it's pretty bad. And my wife is not on that bandwagon. She just kind of says to me, right, you just tell me at the end of each month, like, how we're doing. What can we afford? What is our position? You know, and she sees us for change. She has, but that's fine.
I feel like so many couples fall into that dynamic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hands down. And it's funny because she, you know, we run the Big Dollar Energy, business together, and that gives a lot of support to people. You know, to help them with their budgets and all that kind of stuff. And she does. I'd say a majority of that stuff. So she probably knows more than I do around finances and all that kind of stuff. Yet she doesn't enjoy doing the spreadsheety side of thing. You know, she doesn't enjoy any of that stuff. I love that stuff. I'll sit in my budget spreadsheet every day if I could, you know, crunching all sorts of different numbers and projections. Whereas she's just happy with learning and talking about concepts and ideas and practical ways. But that, you know, it works for us and we were able to kind of combine those things. But again, that goes back to your point of do what works for you, right? If you're in a relationship with someone that really enjoys one half of it, cool, that's what their job is. And, you know, the other half can go to the other partner. Or if you were by yourself and you found a way, like maybe, I don't know, taking out your spending money and doing cash stuff into envelopes, you know, to figure out how much you can spend and all that kind of thing, cool, do that. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah. And this can be the great thing about money in a relationship, as long as it's working well, depends on the relationship. But I often think that when it's a healthy dynamic, that ideally you actually do have both quite different approaches and do have quite different strengths, because then you can divvy up the roles as long as you're agreed on the goal that you're working towards together, and that sort of keeps you united, then you can take the bits that you each sort of like the most or at least hate the least.
Yeah.
And it works.
Definitely. I completely agree. And especially, on the goal thing, that's number one importance, I think, in relationships. If you've got the same goal, if you've got a collective goal you're working towards, doesn't matter how you're going to get there, but as long as you're both on the same page of what that goal is, that's super important.
Well, especially when we're talking, and you mentioned this a bit earlier, and I'm glad you mentioned there about how important the goals are, because I wanted to pick up on that. It's coming through a lot in what you're saying, and keeping that positive relationship with your money. And when you're on a budget, sometimes it can be really easy to fixate on what you're losing. And I think if that's how you're feeling, you're not going to last, because of course, if you're feeling like you're just missing out on everything, it's going to suck. Meanwhile, if you are, you know, to take your goal, you know, you want to smash that mortgage. Amazing. I'm in a similar place at the moment. I just really want to smash down that mortgage. To not have such a big regular bill, that's freedom, right? You know, if you're still working, then you've suddenly just got your money life has just opened up. When you're connecting to that bigger goal, it keeps you motivated. You know, you might have something come up like your mom's wedding, and you're thinking, this is such an exciting time. I really want to get her an amazing present. This is really cool. And that's fine. But when you've connected your money journey to a bigger goal, then when you get past that event and you're going back on track, it doesn't feel like, ugh, okay, back to the budget, here we go. It's that excitement of, woo, back on track, gonna smash that mortgage some more, here we go, one step closer to freedom. I feel like anytime people are struggling with money, it often comes back to, why are you doing this? Do you have a reason for doing this? Because that then is so motivating for any of the tougher challenges along the way, right?
Feel the feeling of how it's going to feel to that goal. I completely feel you on the mortgage thing. Like, I shudder at the amount that I pay. That's pretty much all interest to banks every fortnight for my mortgage. And I'm like, imagine what I could do with that money if I wasn't paying that bill all the time. Oh, that would be amazing. So that's what keeps me going. I look at that amount and go, soon. Hopefully soon, who knows, that amount of money will just be in my account and I won't have to part with that money. I can choose what I want to do with that. I mean, yes, having a mortgage is a privilege and having a house is a privilege. And I've chosen to spend this much on my mortgage, and part of me realizes how dumb that is, but it's also important to my goals. You know, like, we chose to build a house down by the beach for our girls with a reception that was big enough for them to play and all those kind of things, because that was what, you know, that was our choice to do that. And so now, because of that, we have a relatively big mortgage. But we also choose to focus on that and try and pay that off as quick as possible. We actually recently looked at the idea of selling that house and buying something much cheaper to absolutely slap to that goal. But also came back down to other goals of, like, okay, the kind of life we want for our kids, kind of things that are important to us right now. While those might change over time, you've got to balance them right with your other goals. So we don't want to completely smash out one goal to ruin our chances on all the other goals in our lives, right? But it's important. It's important to keep sight of that and to go, this is why I'm doing it. There's a reason I'm not just crazy.
No, and I'm with you. It's funny, isn't it? Where, especially when you're marinating in the money world, people like you and I who talk to people about money all the time, it can be really easy to get caught up in what's the sort of correct thing to do with your money. And I do that in many areas. I do obviously try to make the smartest financial choice in most situations. But there have also been times when I've said, financially, this isn't the optimal solution, but money is only about building my ideal life. It's not about fitting someone else's idea of the best life. And so to say, this is the lifestyle we want, especially the lifestyle we want for our kids, that's huge. And to be able to put yourself in a space where you can make in one area a financially less optimal decision because you have optimized everything else. That's the freedom you get when you're looking at it overall and saying, I'm going to do this, 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 and this perfectly correctly. But this one, no, this is my life, my one beautiful life. And it doesn't have to be optimized, actually.
It's not all the decisions have to be perfect and logical and all those kind of things, because emotion does come into it. Again, we're human. Like, you know, we were looking at the house we could have bought and it was great, it was fine and everything. But the thing that stopped us was we realized how much we'd get for our house that we've just built. And it sounds so stupid and privileged, but we didn't like the amount that we were going to get for the house. It didn't seem like enough. And that sounds so stupid, but it's because we poured everything of ourselves into that house. It took us 2.5 years to build, and we had probably the biggest trials and tribulations to build that house. And so it meant something more emotionally than it did logically to hold on to that and go, okay, yeah, it might not be the best financial decision, but it makes sense for us. And it's the one thing that we are willing to continue not being optimal for everything else to be good.
I'm so with you. I'm so with you on that. Okay, if there was just one thing that people took away from this conversation you and I are having, if there's one thing you wanted people to remember to help them feel good, feel more in control of their money, what would that one thing be?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think, you know what? I'm going to be really, what's the word? I don't know. Self-absorbing. And say, remember the phrase big dollar energy. Because it will make you laugh. And this is the point of it. Like, it's going to make you laugh and go, you know what? I want big dollar energy, you know, and try and let that bring you back to your relationship with money and not fearing it and being upfront and realistic and keeping a lighthearted approach, because, you know, if so much of us are in the same position and no one's going to be judging you. No one's going to be going, oh my God, you can't handle yourself. Money is money, you know? Why have you got those people in your life if they're going to be like snooty and be like, oh, yeah, well, you can't pay for this. Like, who cares? Screw them. You know, surround yourselves with the other people that are going to be like, yeah, that's tough, you know, which I think most people get, but yeah, there's definitely the odd one out there, right? So yeah, remind yourself to try and have big dollar energy and gain that confidence around money. Know your shit. Know what you're going to be doing with yourself, you know? Quicker you face up to it and own it, the better you'll be, hands down.
I love it. Big dollar energy. I think we could all do with a little bit more of that in our lives. Thank you so much. That's Cameron Wisling, founder of Big Dollar Energy Budgets. Now, if you want to ask me a question about this or any other money topic, we can maybe include it in a future podcast, get in touch. You can find me pretty much everywhere all over the internet at Frances Cook NZ. That's me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm on LinkedIn as well. And if you want a money tip in your inbox every single week, then come along and sign up to the Money Memo as well. You can find that on my website, francescook.co.nz. Totally free. Let's chat some money without social media algorithms getting in the way. But the biggest thing, of course, if you want to support this podcast, is just hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.